Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Mistakes.
Ow.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm on my second day of taking prep.
I love that.
I've been prep-pilled. Literally. Ew, I hate myself.
Yeah, I don't take prep because I don't have gay sex.
I'm
happy for you.
Yeah,
I'll be seeing you.
Problem is that I have technically heterosexual sex with gay men, so.
Yeah, it's sad that I won't be seeing you or any of our friends in God's eternal kingdom. But I will think of you fondly while I'm there.
Also, to be clear, I know that it's not only gay men who can get and give HIV.
Wait, really?
I just feel like, you know, because doctors refer to it as like the higher risk demographic.
Gay cancer.
What?
Gay cancer. That's what they call it. Or that's what they used to call it.
Medically?
My mom
said, colloquially.
No, I mean, like, when not HIV itself, but AIDS specifically, when, like, at the height of the AIDS epidemic, they were calling it the gay cancer before, like, anyone knew what it was, including doctors.
Got it. No, I mean, you know, like, when you're getting tested and they ask if you, like, have sex with men who have sex with men?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
No, because I don't get tested. Yeah,
Shut
I do.
Shut the fuck up.
I don't get tested because I don't have sex.
Well, good for you. Those of us who are cool and...
Not an incel, because it's not involuntary.
It's Volcel.
Yeah, Volcel. I'm saving myself for...
Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that everyone and anyone is technically vulnerable to getting HIV.
Yeah, that's why people shouldn't.
So don't have sex, but if you are going to have sex, maybe if you are going to have sex and you're maybe going to sometimes forget to wear a condom, or if that condom maybe breaks, PrEP is a good thing for not just gay men to be on, is the point that I was trying to get to.
It's not that I forget to use condoms. It's just that they never end up on the dick.
Yeah, we make balloon animals with them.
Is going inside.
Yeah, I use condoms.
I just, every time I think of asking someone to put on a condom, suddenly they're inside of me. So.
Okay, so you should be on PrEP. See, this is a great example.
I know.
This episode sponsored
condoms.
By PrEP.
The fact that I've gotten to date, I mean, I'm getting tested on Saturday, so we'll find out. But so far, the fact that I've gotten one STI in my entire life, and I've been having sex since I was 16 and really can count my fingers, count my hands, the amount of times I've used condoms is insane to me. But here we are. Let us know, listeners. Have you too avoided a lifetime of STIs?
If anything, I just, you maybe just outed yourself for, like, how little ass you get.
No, I fuck, is the thing. It wasn't until I went into my first and only dark room that I got an STI.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which one?
It was in Brazil. Oh. I was
Which like,
what
dark room?
I'm like, I don't know.
That's going to be picked up.
Gonorrhea. I talked about this on an episode where I gave someone gonorrhea and I didn't tell them. Sorry. May that be a lesson to always get tested.
Yes, and may that also
I was
be
doing,
a lesson
I was
to...
teaching them. I was teaching them a lesson.
Well, like, presumably they never told you either.
Yeah, no, they didn't.
You know? Like,
yeah. Well, I was also asymptomatic, so they might have been asymptomatic. And we're both AMAB.
Right, but that person presumably eventually got tested.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Maybe.
And then didn't tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah, or to this day, they have extreme gonorrhea.
They just don't know about it.
Extreme advanced asymptomatic gonorrhea. What is the science behind that? If you have asymptomatic gonorrhea and you never get tested, aren't there still long-term side effects even if you are asymptomatic?
I'm sure. I mean, I definitely had it for a while because I got it while I was studying abroad and I didn't find out until like a month and a half after I got back to New York.
Yeah, but a month and a half, I mean that...
I had it longer than a month and a half. I had it for like 3 months.
But you're supposed to get tested like every 3 months. So presumably 3 months is an okay amount of time to have an STI.
Yeah.
I'm talking years. Like if you have asymptomatic gonorrhea for years, does it stay asymptomatic or does something horrible eventually happen?
I don't know. I know we have some nurses that listen. So
right into the pod. I refuse to Google it.
Tell
us. As somebody who gets regularly tested, it's simply none of my business if long-term gonorrhea has negative effects.
Yeah, I mean,
I know chlamydia makes you sterile eventually.
Okay. Yeah, I don't believe in STIs, so I don't really care.
We're editing that out. Nika's in one of her purposefully saying controversial things mood. Did you not get enough attention
it's
today?
It's a coping mechanism when I'm stressed out. When I'm stressed out, I just become an edgelord.
What are you stressed about?
Oh, just money as always.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Just
subscribe to our Patreon.
Yeah, subscribe to our Patreon. So we got that payout while we're in the woods.
Subscribe to both of our OnlyFans. We're both active on there.
Please
again.
Please do that.
And
or Venmo me directly.
Just send us.
Don't even subscribe to my OnlyFans. Just Venmo me directly. That 3 to 5 day payout is too long. I can't wait. I need it now.
It's also,
I want my money and I want it now.
And they take like a pretty big percent too.
Yeah. It's horrible.
Yeah. Isn't it 20%?
Yeah. It's
something
like,
insane like that.
It's like having a pimp.
What an apt parallel to what today's mistake is going to be.
Oh, amazing.
Today's best mistake is about a sort of a pimp, a madame.
Gorgeous.
But we'll get that. We'll get there later.
Anya's my madame.
Shut the fuck
I wish.
Up. Yeah. I need
a pimp.
Okay. Well,
I need a madame. A consensual one that's like nice to me.
Yeah. I mean, really what they are at their best is like an agent.
Yeah. I need an agent just for life.
Yeah. The bad pimps give the entire business a bad rap when, like, really, you know, we don't blame bosses as a whole for like the bosses of agricultural farms that have like slave labor on them. You know what I mean?
I do.
So like justice for pimps, but the good ones.
Not all pimps.
Oh man, whenever we get canceled, they're gonna have a field day with these sound bites.
Good. Well, then I won't be stressed about money once we get canceled.
Yeah. Give us that ad revenue.
I believe.
Give us those hate listens. Ugh, we were so close to getting canceled by those TERFs and they didn't take the bait.
I know.
I like got into an argument with a bunch of homosexual TERFs, which I do think that adding the homosexual in front of the TERF is an important detail to this story, because you really think that it's an LGBTQ community until time and time again they prove that it's more like an LG community. Mm-hmm. And BTQ can go fuck itself. But honestly, the BTQs are the only ones I really want to hang out with anyway. Same. So y'all have your community. That's fine. But anyway, some L's and some G's were being turfy in my mentions. Mm-hmm. And I just kept linking the podcast as a reply to them.
Hell yeah.
We did not get a spike in listenership. And I really think that they would have, you know, I feel like I was giving them a gift. They were people that seemed like they really thrived off of being angry. Yeah. And had they just clicked on the link, I think they would have had their fix for the day.
I agree. We'll figure it out. It's going to happen for us.
Yeah. So. We did a watch along of She's the Man, Amanda Bynes vehicle that we both stand by. And anyone who thinks it's aged poorly is a narc.
Fuck off.
The She's the Man watch along is going to be our Patreon episode in 2 weeks while we're gone on our little Tennessee road trip. And
our Tennessee mountain home.
So subscribe to the Patreon if you want to watch She's the Man with us. So excited to go to Dollywood. Folks, if you happen to be at Dollywood on May 6th.
Have fun.
Have fun. Just kidding. You can say hi to us, but you don't get to like hang out with us the whole time. I'm sorry. Our friends hang out with us the whole time at Dollywood.
No.
We really separated ourselves from the group and we just had our own day.
We need to go into the museum part this year.
Yeah, we did not do the like kind of educational parts of Dollywood.
I just didn't even know that was an aspect with all of her costumes and shit. It's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's also the kind of like Appalachian like trade area.
Yeah.
Okay, speaking of Appalachian trade, I hope we get some, but
we will.
But what I mean is the skills.
Huh.
Like leather working and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be cool to actually like look at any of that and not just speed walk through it.
I agree.
We got to get some more Dollywood merch.
We do.
I need another Dollywood fanny pack because I can't find mine anywhere. And I assume that as soon as I buy a new one, the old one will appear. But I can't just count on that.
Yeah, no, I need to get one because I didn't last year because I famously didn't have my debit card and they were not taking Apple Pay.
Yeah, Dolly, what's up with that?
It's crazy to me. Even though they had it, it just wasn't working. People who don't take Apple Pay need to get with it. It's 2022.
Agree. Like, I need to
grow up.
I need to not need to carry any cards of any kind around anymore. I want everything to just be on my phone.
Yeah.
Like including my ID.
Same. Like, and that was their goal, but I don't care. You know, they want us to really be on our phones. Leftists have problems with Apple Pay, which I think is crazy.
Wait, what?
I don't know. Just that, like, you know, businesses shouldn't take Apple Pay because it's effectively, you know, in their view, it's trying to get rid of poor people from, you know, accessing spaces. But I'm like, as long as there's always an option to pay without Apple Pay.
Yeah, then whatever. It's actually giving poor people more options on how to pay. Because it's those of us who are poor that usually are like, we only have electronic payment and like our cards don't work or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
It's cuckoo. Just Dollywood, get Apple Pay.
If you care at all, get Apple Pay. Yeah, please. I mean, honestly, I'm ready for the chip. I know that that's what the vaccine was supposed to do, was give us some kind of chip.
I'm ready for the chip, too. I want to be able to, like, just literally, you know, Google shit while I'm, like, in the woods, just, like, lying on the ground. I want to be able to, you know, like, pull something, like, up. You know, like, when you're, like, in those
moods.
Yeah.
I want to be able to pay for something with my fingerprint.
Yeah, same. I want to be able to record.
That's so dystopian.
I want the eye thing from Black Mirror.
Yeah, same.
My Scorpio moon and rising would have a fucking field day with that feature. I would record and playback shit all the time when I got into fights with people.
Same. I feel like the, like, you know, that episode, the way it, like, it forces this person to like show that he cheated or whatever, or that she cheated.
She cheated, yeah.
The scope of reality television.
Just being an influencer would be so much easier. I'd become an influencer.
You could get so many different angles of every disaster.
Yeah. Just being nosy would be so much more fun.
All right.
The sex tapes you could make.
Oh, the sex tapes we could make. Whole new meaning to POV.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. We're going to make this.
Best Mistakes is going to finally get into tech.
Yeah, we're entering the tech market. We're really inspired by Girl Boss Elizabeth
Holmes. We're moving to Silicon Valley, and we're going to, yeah, actually, this is us announcing that we've already invented this.
Yes. So, and we're just looking now for people to fund this. It's there.
Yeah, it exists. We just need investors.
And we're trying to make strategic relationships with people.
And a huge part of the contract, if you're going to be our investor, is that we don't ever have to tell you what the technology is or when it's coming.
But you're going to get it.
Yeah.
We're going to change the world.
It's there. Just take our word for it.
Yeah.
Investment bidding starting at $1 million.
Is this me talking about money being
in my bank account? What?
Is this me talking about money being in my bank account? Yeah, it's there.
Me to my landlord.
Yeah. I'm looking. Why's your rent late? I'm looking to make strategic relationships with investors to get that to you.
Thank you so much for your question. Keep asking questions. Keep being curious. It's so important.
I don't fucking remember that weird quote that she had painted on the wall. Try not do the Yoda quote.
Yeah, I forget. Oh, do or do not, there is no try.
Yeah, do or do not, there is no try.
Anyway. Shall we segment?
Let's do it. Mistakes, keepsakes, and hot
takes. I mean, my mistake this week is that I'm just still not done with my taxes, even though tax day has come and gone. So if any accountants listen to this pod and want to just kind of do that for me, LMK, just kidding. I think I'm in touch with an accountant. We're already in the process of tackling this mistake, but I'm in my hashtag fearful avoidant era with finances. My keepsake is that I am coming out of my hashtag fearful avoidant era, and I'm definitely, like, you know, we were talking about a few weeks ago when we were talking about how we're trying to, like, enter our girl boss doing shit era, and, like, one tactic that I learned is the idea of a scary hour every day where you, like, do the shit that has been stressing you out or that scares you to think about doing or whatever. Mm-hmm. I've been utilizing the fuck out of scary hour, and my keepsake is that it's been working, and I've been, like, really plowing through, what was once a very, like, daunting to-do list of things that normally trigger my, like, deepest anxieties.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not, you know, fixed. I'm still, an avoidant person.
Yeah.
But I can feel, you know, like, I don't need to fix these qualities about myself. Like, there's plenty of things that will never, quote unquote, be fixed. Mm-hmm. But, like, I just am getting better at, dealing with the hand that I've been dealt as far as my strengths and weaknesses. I'm learning how to navigate those weaknesses better. So if anyone else that's listening has an issue with avoidance and being an avoidant person when things stress you out, I highly recommend trying the scary hour method, where just 1 hour a day, you only have to try for an hour to do the shit that is scaring you right now. So that's my keepsake and my recommendation for anyone that struggles with the same thing. My hot take is that I'm done with the description of something that's good being quote unquote better than sex.
Yes.
We need to come up with a different thing that things are better than, that's, like, more impressive than that, because, like, plenty of shit is
better than sex.
Sex is great, but it's, like, sex is only great when sex is great.
It's better than coming up on Molly.
Yeah, see? Like, I need to be actually impressed. Because sex varies in quality, but there are some experiences in life that are nothing but amazing. And so we need to start using those as the benchmark.
Yeah.
Like, it's my better example, than better than waking up to a text or a call that whatever you have to do that day is canceled and you can go back to sleep.
It's better than Van Leeuwen ice cream.
Ugh, can you even imagine?
Can you imagine? It's better than going to Dollywood for the first time.
Oh my God. And who knows? Maybe something that's better than going to Dollywood for the first time is going to Dollywood for the second time. But we just don't know yet.
We just don't
know. We'll report back.
We will. We're going to record while we're there.
Okay, actually, would be very funny to get sound bites just from our, like, phones or something.
We'll do it.
For our Patreon.
For Patreons.
For our sweet, sweet patrons. Yeah, just, you know, better than, like, the first day of the year that breaks 70 degrees.
Yes.
Just some things that are universally good no matter what every time.
Yeah.
Because sex ain't it.
Yeah.
Telling me something is better than sex tells me nothing about what that thing is like.
True. I agree with you.
Your turn.
Okay. My mistake is that I bought something from Dolls Kill this week. I know. But every time I buy something from Dolls Kill, which is not often, I justify the purchase by telling myself, and this is true, that I am going to wear it until it absolutely falls apart for OnlyFans content. Because I only buy slutty things from Dolls Kill. So, whatever. I needed a last minute look for our trip.
Yeah, I mean, write it off.
I will. I needed a last minute look for our trip. So, I bought it.
I'll die on the hill that Dolls Kill, like, supporting Dolls Kill is unethical, but it's not more or less unethical than, like, a lot of the other things we support on the daily basis.
Totally.
And so, you know, I don't encourage anyone to be like a Dolls Kill number one fan ordering every day from them. But every once in a while is kind of the same as like...
I've bought three things from Dolls Kill in my whole life.
Same.
Okay, four things because I bought a choker as well. I needed a better demon look than what I currently have, which is also from Dolls Kill.
You do not.
And I was gonna buy a wig, and then I decided to borrow a wig from a friend. So I was like, well, if I'm not spending that exact amount of money on a wig, then I can buy a different look. This is the most financially irresponsible line of thinking. If I'm not buying that thing, I can just buy that thing instead.
Whatever.
Whatever.
YOLO.
Yeah, I've been feeling really bad. I always feel bad about how financially a mess I am, even though it's like, most of my friends are. And then one of our friends was telling me how they are putting so much of this trip just like on a credit card. And I was like, okay, so like we're kind of all in different sinking boats.
Yeah, so many of our friends have revealed to me like their own like financial...
We should have a heart circle about it.
We actually should.
We really should.
Yeah, if we all just came clean about like how bad it is. First of all, the ones who are in better shape might be more likely to like pick up the tab every once in a while.
Seriously.
And also help us out with their fucking knowledge.
Yeah.
But also, this could honestly be another hot take, is that I feel like a huge source of people's financial ignorance and instability is due to how finances are supposedly private for
reason. Yeah, well, that's where like the isolation stems from too, I think, because it's really isolating to be broke, even if like, you know, even if you're doing everything wrong. You know, I don't really believe in that line of thinking, but if you're someone who does, even if you're doing everything wrong, you know, you're overspending, you're living out of your means, et cetera, you still shouldn't, like, you should still be able to talk about where you are financially with people. But we have this attitude that you're not supposed to talk about money with people.
And what's so funny, like, in our community specifically, is that it's so anti-shame with all the other areas of life. But, like, I can just see each other, like, I can see everyone kind of trying to keep up with the Joneses a little bit.
Yeah.
And none of us are the Joneses.
Yeah.
We're keeping up with, like, a phantom Jones.
Yeah.
And too ashamed to, like, talk about what that is doing to us financially. And I, you know, I don't mean to speak for everyone, but just generally.
Yeah, no. But there, you know, more of us are in it together than we realize. I've begun to realize, because I've just been trying to get more honest about like where I'm at financially. It's like,
same.
I can always
start with being honest with yourself.
Yeah. It's like, I can always pay my bills on time, and that's all I care about. As long as I can pay my bills, whatever. But like, I'm broke all the time right now. That's life. But yeah, it's definitely been humanizing to hear some of our friends talk about how broke they also are. Okay, my keepsake. What is my keepsake? I had a nice conversation with my mom this week about money. just about the way the world is and about kind of my awakening in the last 2 years in New York to like the evils of capitalism and how like exhausting it is to be financially independent. Though it's like, what is being financially independent even mean? Because I don't even really feel like I am that financially independent. Anyway, and that was like a nice conversation because in my early 20s when I was always broke, it's because I just like wasn't working and taking care of myself and like making really irresponsible choices. And so when I would have conversations with my parents about money because they were helping to take care of me, it obviously didn't go well and would turn into fights because they were just like frustrated with me. But this was like one of the first like adult conversations where we've like just had like an adult to adult convo about like capitalism sucks, babe, but like live your life. You know, I realized in that convo like how much I do live my life in the moment, which I'm very thankful for because mm-hmm. not everyone else can say that.
That's priceless, baby.
That is priceless. And my hot take. I mean, honestly, my hot take is also related to that. I was thinking this last night when I left your apartment and I was in McDonald's ordering a large fry and a Sprite.
The best McDonald's order.
Best McDonald's, though they forgot my fucking sauce that I paid 89 cents for and I didn't realize until I got home I wanted to fucking kill myself.
Yeah. I'm so sorry that happened to you.
It's fine. It's like, you know. It's
just, that's capitalism, baby.
That is capitalism.
Getting fucked over by the man yet again.
Yet again by that.
1 89-cent sauce packet at a time.
Come on, man. Could have put that 89 cents towards, I don't know.
Investments.
Stocks. I could have bought Bitcoin with that 89 cents. Like, the metaverse is waiting for me. No, my hot take is that, like, more people should be living in the moment right now, I think, at this point in time. I'm not that doomsday in the sense that, like, I don't believe that, like, humans or like the world is ending or humans are like gonna die out in 100 years. I honestly think that like humans are probably gonna be here for another few thousand years and society is gonna continue on and it's just gonna be something different. But I'm like doomsday in the sense that like I don't believe that shit is gonna get any better in our lifetime. It's gonna get worse. I think like we're definitely gonna be like looked back in like 500 years in history books as like the people at the end of like the Roman Empire, mm-hmm. you know, the ones who were like dying while like the Visigoths like ravaged the cities that absolutely. Like had no resources. So it's like, and maybe that isn't true, but I personally think that it is. And so it's like, I think that it makes so much more sense to just live in the moment right now rather, you know, I think that you need to have some foresight. You need to plan a little bit for the future because you don't want to end up being like, I don't know, 50 or 60 years old and you have like no way to take care of yourself. But I think living in the moment is way more important and not planning super far ahead is actually healthier right now in the world that we're living in because shit is so fucking bleak that mm-hmm. it's like I would just much rather continue living my life by like chasing radical forms of joy, mm-hmm. even if they are indulgent. And I'm not going to like feel bad about that as long as I can continue to take care of myself and like meet up to my like obligations and expectations that people have of me and I have of myself.
But like those things in the moment rather than yes. like hypothetical ones in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's also something to be said about that. Like, first of all, the human lifespan is getting longer and longer. So the expectation that we need to have like a complete financial retirement plan ready by 65 isn't really like the case anymore.
Yeah.
65-year-olds are very much still in the workforce and not like, plenty of them are elderly, but a lot of 65-year-olds are like middle-aged at this point
yeah.
and like health-wise middle-aged as well and like happily still working for their living.
Yeah.
My dad being a good example of someone who's like, you know, he's getting older in that there are like obviously just signs of aging, but he's like not any less capable of working, nor is he interested in stopping working. And yeah. he's in his 60s. And like he is 2-3 generations before us.
Yeah.
So like what is possible for like, I think the timeline of when you need to be like ready for and prepared for retirement is changing anyway. And what retirement even means is changing because Social Security isn't the same as like when we even came up with the concept of retirement. And I think a lot financially and politically and like, you know, economically on a national scale is going to change dramatically in our lifetime.
Yeah.
So like it, for me personally, I don't think that it's stupid for anyone who is preparing at our age for retirement. But for me personally, I find it very, hard to be motivated to do so when it feels so fickle at the moment. Yeah, I mean, what it is we're even preparing for.
Yeah, I can't even see, like, you know, looking into the future is like black. I can't even see like myself in 10 years, let alone 25 or like 30 or 40. So it's like, not that I don't think I'll be here, but I'm like, life is so uncertain in this world that we're living in right now that it's like, I don't want to focus on that aspect of my life right now.
Right.
It doesn't, it's just, yeah, I want to seek joy.
Yeah.
That's how I feel, even if it's that stressful sometimes.
That being said, I do recommend people open a Roth IRA as young as possible. It is a retirement account. And you don't have to contribute that much to it, but everything you contribute to it is not taxed. So it does help you with your taxes. And you can only contribute $6,000 per year, which, quote unquote, only. That's a lot for some of us. But it also, it kind of puts a cap on, like, how much you can even expect yourself to contribute to your retirement funds, which I think is kind of helpful because it's sort of, I feel like retirement feels kind of ethereal to some of us and like what, how much money are we even supposed to be putting aside for it? Yada, yada, yada. But I do have a Roth IRA. I don't put $6,000 a year into it. I put a couple thousand a year into it. I opened it when I was 24. And what everybody says that has a retirement account, the universal thing everyone says is that they wish they opened it sooner. And so even if all you can afford to put into it right now is $100, I like really, really recommend anyone who feels the same way we do and it feels a little bit like, ah, fuck it, we'll figure it out eventually. Just like open one of those accounts, put a couple hundred dollars into it, and like eventually you'll be able to put more into it. But like,
yeah,
it's just a good idea. And I'll just say that. And that's coming from someone who is, I cannot stress enough, completely uninterested in like that kind of stuff in general, but it is like a pretty basic way to be a little bit more prepared than not prepared at all.
Yeah.
But like still fully agree with your just be present hot take.
Yar.
They're not necessarily mutually exclusive, you know.
Yar.
But yeah, definitely on my mind a lot recently is kind of that exact concept. And we've talked a little bit about on this podcast before the idea of like retiring throughout your life rather than retirement being like a chunk of time at the end of your life. Because we don't know how long us as individuals are going to live. We don't know if we're even going to make it to this like hypothetical retirement period. We don't know if like, let's say these, everyone does the right thing, has these retirement accounts. All of us put all of our money into those retirement accounts and then the system as we know it collapses and that means nothing.
I mean, my mom sent me this thing yesterday that I thought was like, you know, very to the point of what we're saying. It was a series of tweets. Okay, so someone tweeted at Marcelo Clore, it bothers me when I hear young employees talking about work-life balance at an early stage of their lives. Work your butt off at the beginning, make money, save it. And then later in life, aim for work-life balance as you will need it with kids and partners, etc. This is my POV. And at NerdPile said, believers of this guy's tweet, you should frame this, then look back at it with regret years later after wasting your youth pointlessly grinding on things that didn't matter and missing opportunities to enjoy things that you're now physically unable to so he could get rich off of you. And
period.
Obviously, again, save money, take care of yourself, have a nest egg. Everyone needs it. But like the fact of the matter is that the average American, what is it, can't even afford. I think it's a $5,000 emergency right now. So it's just like, and you know, that extends to the point of the fact that like we all, a lot of us feel very isolated with how broke we are because we feel like we're doing something wrong because capitalism has taught us that like financial hardship is like a personal choice rather than like a systemic issue and also like is literally on purpose most of the time because it's how they keep people exploited. So it's like go have fun.
Yeah. Period.
Period. Capital P, period.
Also, in the way that what everyone says is that they wish they started their retirement account earlier, another thing everyone says in their older ages is that they wish that they enjoyed being in a youthful body while they had it. And, like, that doesn't mean literally, like, your physical abilities, but, like, there is just something about being a young person. You know, they say youth is wasted on the young, but I don't think it's the young that wastes youth. I think it's the way that society treats the young that wastes youth. Like, I think if left to our own devices, we wouldn't be wasting youth. And, like, you and I are kind of proof of that because we've kind of, like, forced ourselves to not waste our youth.
I mean, these are...
But, like, we are actively thought as, like, our lifestyle is considered countercultural.
I know.
You know? So, like, it's not that, like, we... It's not an easy decision we made to enjoy our youth.
No.
Like, everything around us has been telling us not to. Yeah. When it's, like, an active decision we make, in the same way that saving for retirement is an active decision, I'm like, yeah, let's think about our future, but, like, let's not waste what we have right now.
No, I mean, I'm fully of the belief right now that, like, these are the best years of my life, and not because I'm young, but just because these are probably, like, the best years of, like, this current century. Like, you know, I was thinking this last night in McDonald's waiting for my large fry and small Sprite. Like, I was just like, again, like, I want to, like, imagine a better world and, like, world build with people. And, like, I'm not really a doomsday kind of, like, everything's gonna fucking suck kind of person. Like, I hate those kinds of people because I think that, like, mutual aid and, like, you know, there are ways to, like, carry on with life even when shit is, like, really bleak and bad. Like, it's been horrible before, it'll be horrible again. But I just, like, kind of do feel that, like, these are the best years of everyone's life. So I want them to be the best years of my life.
Of the generations that are currently alive, these are the best years that we're going to get.
Yeah.
Point being, debt is stupid.
Debt is stupid and we're hippies. I love thinking about how people must look, not just like me and you, you know, me and you, but just like our lives, like people like us. I'm like, oh, it's so funny that like people who don't live our life, like look at us as being like bohemian and like... Like, people call me a bohemian woman a lot, and I sometimes think they're joking, and then I realize that they're serious, and I'm like, that's super funny.
Whatever, I'll take it.
No, I love it. I mean, it's like a built... I would love to be a bohemian woman. I mean, absolutely. I didn't start using a schedule in my calendar until 2 months ago. Fully bohemian, derogatory. sometimes bohemian, not derogatory, celebratory.
I mean, one of the reasons I really don't want to have kids is so that I never really have to, like, grow out of my bohemian lifestyle. I mean,
yeah, same.
Not that, listen, you know, if anyone is, if anyone's proof that you can be bohemian and have kids, it's like, my parents are pretty good examples of that, as well as, like, I don't know, Kesha's mom. Mm. Plenty of people are bohemian and raise children. If anyone's proof that you can be bohemian and have kids, it's like, my parents are pretty good examples of that, as well as, like, I don't know, Kesha's mom. Mm. Plenty of people are bohemian and raise children, but it does require getting your shit together, like, to an extent that your child's life is not negatively impacted by your free-spirited nature.
No, I mean, I barely make enough to, like, I make just enough to pay my bills and then, you know, barely enough to have fun. I could not imagine having to spend that barely enough on another person.
I mean, the reality is that if, like, we just wouldn't be living the life that we're living.
I know, and then I would put a loaded gun in my mouth. No, thank you. No kids, no partner. I'm sore good.
Yeah, I don't need to be accountable to anyone else's financial well-being. No. And also, every time I'm, like, romantically interested in somebody, they're also equally bohemian in their finances. Mm. And I'm like, I don't need to be taking that on either. Like, we don't need to be intertwining this.
Well, not always, because, I mean, it varies who I like. But generally, I'm into, like, I'm into guys like my dad. I'm generally into financially... I mean, I'm into everyone, but I always go for guys. Usually into, like, financially stable, emotionally repressed men. But that also doesn't work for me, because then it makes me feel bad about myself.
Well,
that
so
they are so financially stable.
Same,
and
I think that that's probably why I'm not even attracted to people like that. Because I'm like, I don't even... Like, I rather commiserate over how, like, stupid hard all of this is than
also,
feel
like, give me your
stupid.
Credit card.
Yeah, open. Just give me an account that you put an allowance in every week.
Wait, I would love that. I don't want a sugar daddy, but like, if anyone that listens is like, I think Nika's hot, I'd love to date her. If if you're like in this community and you make money and you want to open me a bank account and put a weekly allowance in it, hit me up. I'll be your girlfriend. I'll do it. Even if you're not hot.
So, sugar daddy.
No, I mean, if you have a good personality. I've dated not hot guys before.
Yeah, but sugar daddies, you're technically like, quote unquote, dating your sugar daddy.
No, I don't want a sugar daddy. I want someone that I actually like.
Yeah, plenty of people actually like their sugar
daddy. No, I don't want, I'm saying an actual boyfriend. I don't want a sugar daddy. Mm-hmm. I want a boyfriend to take care of me. I don't want a sugar daddy. Yeah.
Okay, so a sugar daddy that she actually likes. Anyway, what do we think the fuck up of the week is?
Definitely this Ezra Miller shit.
Ezra Miller is non-binary fuck up representation.
Yeah, Ezra Miller's just out here terrorizing Hawaii. They've been arrested so many times.
Yeah. Is Ezra Miller... Ezra's not, like, Hawaiian, right?
No. They're okay. Just there.
Okay, so that's even more embarrassing. Like, everyone's been pretty clear about that we're not supposed to go to Hawaii if we're not from there. And this, like, New Jersey actor is absolutely posted up assaulting people left and right. Oh, yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know, Ezra Miller has been arrested multiple times in the last couple of weeks for like disorderly conduct and second degree assault. And somebody tweeted that you're more likely to get assaulted by Ezra Miller than you are to get bitten by a shark.
Someone else tweeted, imagine having a nice dinner then Ezra Miller walks in. I'd be so scared. Oh my God. Also, this one, Ezra Miller, every 5 to 6 business days.
Ezra Miller is actually, this is apt timing for the girlies of our friend group deciding that AMAB non-binary people are canceled. Yeah. We're done with the they he's and we're back in are the he they's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Ezra Miller is proof that there's not enough nail polish or lingerie in the world that and AMAB, mostly male-presenting non-binary person, can wear that won't, that will undo the internalized toxic masculinity, you know?
Yeah.
Listener mistakes.
All right, this mistake comes from Oliver. Hey, besties, I'm writing this email from the train back to Vermont from NYC, the same one I assume Anya took back in the day. I mean, I still take that train sometimes. I know it well, the Ethan Allen Express. Anyways, this is a mistake that took place almost 3 full years ago now. I was in a long-distance relationship with a girl from Europe while I was living in the States. We met while she was an exchange student at my high school. We somehow kept dating, and we made plans to meet in Amsterdam for a week right after Christmas. Okay, Vermont and Amsterdam? Are you trying to steal my life? Okay, this is suspicious. Oliver, are you stalking me? As soon as I met her in the airport, I realized I was no longer in love with her. Oh, that's a rough realization to have immediately. Ugh. But we still had a week together in a tiny Airbnb. Ugh. I was so emotionally distraught, I could not eat. I played it off as jet lag and nerves from being in a new country. But I think by the 4th day, she was tired of us lying in bed watching TV all day together. We started to have classic lesbian crying arguments. I was trying to hint at a breakup and she was not taking it well. Oliver, are you a Cancer? You should have just been up front. We previously had never had any disagreements of any kind. I eventually got it out that I wanted to separate and she immediately ran to the bathroom to vomit. Yikes. Later that day, we went to the Anne Frank Museum.
Oh, my God.
And we stayed friends for a few months after, but I will admit that this was mostly because I felt guilty abandoning her. She was still going to follow me to the university I was attending. My mistake was not realizing I did not want to be in a relationship with this person before spending $1,000 on plane tickets and housing and by dragging out the breakup to last a week. I also regret being half-assed friends with her instead of just cutting her off completely. I'm so glad to be out of that relationship and friendship, and I like to think that although she was pissed at me and caught off guard, that she now realizes we are better not together and not talking to each other. Listen, it's not that I can't empathize with your experience in general. It's just that I won't. No, it's just that I am currently very much my lived experiences in this moment is more of the other person in this situation.
Yeah, same.
So I'm a little bit, I'm a little bit on her side. Not that there are sides to be taken here. You're right. You are better off not together. And that's
what's her name? I'm going to make t-shirts that say team, whatever her name is.
Yeah, whatever. Team girl in Amsterdam. Yeah. We don't know. But in any case, I don't judge you for this because I've definitely been in similar situations. And I've definitely also made similarly bad calls throughout those situations that I have learned from. However, just in this moment, I really feel for the other girl.
Yikes.
It's also hilarious that you went to the Anne Frank house. Very John Green of you guys.
I love that. I went to the Anne Frank house stoned out of my mind after smoking a hash joint. I thought I wouldn't be high after waiting in line, but I was stoned. Don't go to the Anne Frank house high.
No.
It's a bad, bad idea.
Definitely don't do that.
Yeah. I wrote, love you and you would have been a believer in the guest book. No, I'm just kidding. Could you imagine? What a time to be alive when Justin Bieber did that. That was amazing. That had Twitter in a chokehold.
Well, what's funny is
not Twitter,
is
Tumblr.
That... Yes, probably both. But yeah. What's funny about Justin Bieber writing that in the guest book is that what it reveals most about him is not so much that he thinks that he's so amazing that Anne Frank would have been his fan. It's more what it revealed about him is that is the only way he knew how to relate to teenage girls was them being his fans.
Yeah.
You know, he was like, oh, I guess she's kind of the same age as my fans. I guess she would have been a believer.
Anne Frank would have been a bestie. She would have loved this pod.
Anne Frank would have... Okay, Anne Frank would have absolutely fucking loved this podcast.
Yeah, she would have been a patron.
You can quote us on that. Yeah. Anne Frank would have been a patron.
Can we make that the episode title? Anne Frank would have been a patron.
We should make those shirts too.
Wait, we should make it with the link right underneath it. Or at Best Mistakes Pod. Wait, yes. Can we put her face on it?
Yes. Yeah. We'll talk about it.
Okay. Yeah, no. Anne Frank definitely would have loved this podcast.
She would have just had Justin Bieber and this podcast.
Anne Frank,
just
come on repeat.
Anyway, Oliver, thank you for your vulnerability and...
don't ever do that again.
Yeah, and you better learn from that mistake. And write in, are you a Cancer? I'm curious. Because that's a very Cancerian thing to drag that out for as long as you did. Yeah. Not that I would know from personal experience.
Deep dive. Deep dive.
This one is... short, but I do feel bad about it. This is a mistake about how my ADD that I may or may not have and my disorganization and also my anxious attachment style and then also just kind of all of my anxieties came to a head. But I, 3 years ago, decided that I was going to sell a bunch of clothes during a manic episode to move to New York because I just thought that, selling dresses and pants and shit that would make me probably $300 would then get me to move to New York.
Sure.
In a month, because that's how that works, because I constantly was just treating New York like it was Patti Smith's New York and just kids and not the 2000s. So... I had this trans girl who had just come out that was following me on Instagram and on Twitter, and she bought like a pair of jeans and a dress and a shirt.
Begin again at what she bought.
So she bought a pair of pants, a dress, and a shirt. And I like put it aside and was like ready to get it to her. And then I don't know where I went, but I like went on a weekend trip. And basically when I came back, I realized that I had to like quickly move out of the apartment that I was in because I couldn't afford it anymore. And the first was coming up. So I gave them like super last minute notice that they had to find a new subletter. And in the mix of it all, from like fleeing one apartment to go move into another with like no money in my bank account, I totally like I left like a bunch of shit in that apartment, and I was so embarrassed because I like really liked the people that I was living with. They were like, they're very cool artists in my hometown. And I was so embarrassed by the fact that I had like given them such short notice and that I had moved out in like such a hurry and kind of like fled that apartment and like not really just treated them with like the level of maturity that they, that that situation like needed. Mm-hmm. That I left a bunch of shit there, including the clothes that I was supposed to sell to this girl. So the girl obviously texted me like a bunch of times, or like DM'd me on Twitter and Instagram, just like asking about where the clothes were. And she was obviously super excited because she had just come out and was like living in like bumfuck middle of nowhere, New Hampshire, if my memory serves correctly. And this was going to be like her first batch of like girl clothes. And I was just, I felt so bad that I had like fucked her over, like by like forgetting about the clothes and like leaving them in the apartment that I knew I wasn't going to go back to retrieve because I didn't want to see the people who lived in the apartment, that I just never responded to her. And she continued following me for a very long time. She like never unfollowed me. She might even still follow me to this day. I don't know. She never unfollowed me. She eventually stopped asking, but I just... I felt bad. If you listen to this podcast, let me know your Venmo, because I don't even remember who this person was. I just remember it happening. And I think it was, you know, it was like $40 that I charged for this like package. And so it's like, it was money owed, you know, it was money that she had to spend. I'm happy that it wasn't like $400. But still, I'm sure that like just made her very sad. And then also it's like confusing when someone you like, because she like, you know, kind of like looked up to me as like an internet personality,
right?
And so yeah, I'm sure it was confusing for her. And I think about that every once in a blue moon when I can't sleep. Sorry girl, I'm sorry that I did that to you.
Sorry girly. Yeah, yikes. Wait, so what's the, like, total amount that you potentially...
Like $40.
Owe her?
Yeah, $40.
Okay, well, reach out. If this story is about you, reach out, and Best Mistakes Pod will pay you $40 out of our...
I'll just buy you a dress.
From our Patreon funds. An IOU, so to speak. Yeah. All right, well... Thank you for sharing that deep dive.
Anytime.
Thanks for sharing that you are essentially a scammer and a swindler.
You're welcome.
Gonna charge you with fraud.
You should. Listen.
Wire fraud.
I share this so that if I ever get really, really manic ever again, and I like really, really manic, and I decide that I'm gonna like launch some like new life change that requires people giving me money for it or like backing me in any way, everyone can just be like, no.
Yeah. I'll hold you accountable and be like, hey, Nika, is this a scam?
You know.
If it's a scam, you have to tell me.
I've scammed people too many times, kind of just like unintentionally.
That was like an accidental scam that was just due to your own like
anxieties,
negligence, like anxiety.
Sucks too, because those jeans that she wanted were so cute.
I mean, to be honest, it's a little bit Elizabeth Holmesy of you.
It is.
Sounds like you intended.
I wanted to change the world, and I was looking to make strategic relationships with people.
And this was a strategic relationship that
unfortunately fell through. It fell through. And, you know, there was a lot of bureaucracy and just kind of white men that made it hard for me.
Well, much like bureaucracy and white men good intentions, or much like bureaucracy and white men getting in the way of just, you know, a grand scheme to simply get rich and not hurt anybody. that's what you were trying to do, right? Just get rich with that $40 sale?
I was trying to move to New York. It was the 1970s. Everybody could have $40 in their pocket.
Well, that is exactly like the story of the Hollywood madame, Heidi Fleiss. Best mistake.
Anya, it's really fucked up of you to use a fake name for yourself.
Okay, if I'm ever going to be a madam, it's going to be in New York City. Thank you
very much.
The
radical fairy madame. Is that your, that's your name?
My fairy name is the Hollywood. Is it madame or madam? Like,
I think it's madam.
It is madam, right?
Yeah.
I just heard a lot of different people, like, I... Buffy's just getting comfortable
Buffy's
in the background.
Buffy's telling me to go fuck myself right now.
Buffy's enjoying her life of luxury afforded to her by her madam mother.
I just love that. Sorry, not to get off topic, but just that tweet about my dog sighing 3 times when they don't pay bills and are in fact themselves a bill.
Yeah, Buffy is a bill. She's got a lot of audacity of her sighing at me or groaning at me. I'm like, oh, is it hard getting all of your meals for free? Is it hard having a completely free ride in this life? Anyway, I honestly don't really know how this relates, but we can kind of like circle back to it.
That's fine.
But anyway, this is the story of Heidi Fleiss, or Flies or whatever. I'm going to say Fleiss.
Horrible name.
What?
What a horrible name.
Heidi was... So Heidi, otherwise known as the Hollywood Madam, ran an upscale prostitution ring based in Los Angeles, California in the 1990s and was the center of a media frenzy in 1994 during her prostitution pandering trial.
Okay.
The likes of which was only rivaled at the time by cases like the O.J. Simpson trial or the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Over time, as those cases have, which I find interesting, it's like weird to me that there isn't like a Netflix limited series on her yet. Maybe I'll be the one to write it. So a little bit of backstory before we get into the nitty gritty of her arrest and charges and trial. Heidi was born on December 30th, 1965, and her parents were very much 60s hippies, like your classic 60s hippies. She was one of 6 children born to Paul Fleiss, a popular Los Feliz pediatrician famous for his unconventional medical views. For example, he was a breastfeeding and anti-circumcision advocate. He recommended but did not insist upon childhood vaccinations, and he stated that he could be convinced either way as to whether HIV causes AIDS. So just, you know, your run-of-the-mill hippie doctor.
Yes.
Probably would have hung out with Marianne Williams, you know?
Yes.
Heidi's mother says she raised the kids with a very 60s mentality. Do what feels good and do your own thing. Do we have a 60s mentality?
Yes.
We would have absolutely crushed it in the 60s. Anyway, pretty early on, Heidi got a taste for the benefits of, the benefits that youthful feminine beauty could obtain from older rich men. So when she was 20, she had a lover named Bernie Cornfield, and for her 21st birthday, he gave her $1 million in cash and a Rolls Royce.
Okay.
However, she left him because he didn't want to be monogamous with her, and she ended up later dating a Hungarian film and television director best known for directing films such as Bad Charleston, Charlie, Skinner, and Deadly Hero. His name was Ivan Nagy. Ivan like ran with a little bit of a seedier crowd. He's the one who introduced her to sex work, and specifically sex work facilitated by madams. In 1987, when she was 22, he introduced her to a woman named Madame Alex, and he allegedly sold Heidi to Madame Alex for $450, because that's an amount that was owed to him at the time. To this, when he's asked about it, he says, "Do I look like a person who needs $500?" So he denies that he like sold Heidi to anyone. He does not deny that he introduced Heidi to Alex, though.
Okay.
When talking about meeting Heidi, Madame Alex says that she took Heidi on because she was like charismatic and came by Yvonne's recommendation, but didn't have a lot of hope in her. And she's quoted as saying, "Heidi's not even a five. Rating her from 1 to 10, she barely makes it to 5. But she had a way with men. Men liked her." Which is so funny, because if you actually see pictures of Heidi at this time when she was 22, she's like a stone cold fox, but in a kind of East Coast way.
Yeah.
I guess I can kind of see how, like, maybe for the Beverly Hills standards, she was like a little bit more like alternative or edgy.
Yeah.
So she worked under Madame Alex for 18 months to learn all the aspects of the occupation, but with the intention of becoming a madam herself. She never intended on staying a call girl. It affects the story later on to know that, like, Madame Alex and Heidi, while they had like a they were involved in like business together, and they were very like intensely, they had a very intense friendship at one point. There wasn't like a lot of loyalty there. So by 1990, Fleiss severed her links with Madame Alex and began her own business. And it's assumed / I think claimed by Alex herself that she sort of usurped some of Alex's clientele.
Okay.
So with a knack for recruiting high-end talent, Heidi, by 1991, had amassed a stable of 500 girls. And the look of her call girls was known for, like, a very clean cut and perfect look, like she was born in Beverly Hills. She charged clients about $1,500 a night, which would be the equivalent of $2,800 today. And clients would tip on top of that, sometimes as much as $1 million. Her cut was 40% of all of it. She stated that she made her first $1 million after only 4 months in the business. As a madam, her slowest night, she made $10,000. In her heyday, she serviced celebrities and Hollywood's heavy hitters, including Charlie Sheen. But she was known for her discretion, and she never once spoke about her prominent clientele. She had a famous black book that, was stolen from her, and the contents of it have been leaked in various, like, alleged forms, but has never been confirmed. And it contained the names of her famous clients, and was not actually a black book. It was actually a 28-page red Gucci planner. Charlie Sheen is the only client we know about because when she was apprehended, she had a check from him. So he was subpoenaed for her trial.
Okay.
And he, you know, went on the stand and talked about his experience under oath. So he's the only reason we know about this one high-end client is circumstantial. She never ratted anyone out personally. Yeah. So her downfall came on June 9th, 1993, when she was arrested and charged with 5 counts of pandering. And pandering is kind of just like the word for solicitation on like the quote unquote pimp side of things.
Yeah.
Federal charges were filed in 1994, and Fleiss posted $1 million bail. The case went to trial, where Charlie Sheen testified he'd spent $53,000 a year on Fleiss's services, and a jury convicted her on 3 counts, for which she received a 3-year sentence. That conviction was overturned in 1996, but a federal tax evasion case the next year led to a 20-month stint in prison in Dublin, California. She was released to a halfway house in 1998 and ordered to perform 370 hours of community service. So during her trial, she became the center of media attention. The world's fascination was at least partially fueled by her irreverent candor. One of her quotes during that case was, if you're going to run an illegal business, you better be driving the best car, living in the biggest house, fucking the best looking people, and spending every dollar you make, because sooner or later you're going to get caught.
Hell yeah.
Kind of iconic of her. Yeah. It's kind of like her case, obviously not in the like case itself, but in the media attention, it kind of reminds me of Amanda Knox, where there are like plenty of pandering charges and pandering trials all the time, the same way that there's plenty of murder trials all the time. But when it's with a like beautiful woman that is easy to like scandalize and like pick apart her like, you know, salacious lifestyle, that's when like the media becomes obsessed with it. So like, you know, she's certainly not the only high-end Hollywood like quote-unquote pimp to get caught, but she was definitely one of the, like, the reason that she was so interesting is because she was, like, young and beautiful and, like, seemingly not sorry for what she did. The one thing she was never candid about was her clients. She didn't talk after the LAPD busted her, nor at her trial, and never since. It was just something that seemed very private and personal, that was no one else's business, she said. It's just how I feel about it today, and I always felt. I was offered a lot of money to sell that black book, and there were times when I really needed that money, but it was never something I would do. In 1995, as she was out on bail and awaiting sentencing in her criminal case, British documentarian Nick Broomfield probed the circumstances of her downfall in his film Heidi Fleiss, Hollywood Madam, which I watched. It's free on YouTube if anyone else wants to watch it. It's a pretty good documentary. He found it was the result of her naivete. First, she'd usurped the clients of a long-established Hollywood predecessor, Madam Alex, while working in tandem with a wily boyfriend and late B-movie director, Yvonne Nagy. Then she decided to go solo, antagonizing Nagy, who took revenge by asking sex workers loyal to him to snitch on her to law enforcement. And unlike Madam Alex, Heidi didn't have any kind of deal with the LAPD. Madam Alex has long known how to protect herself in this business, and she's been a like veteran informant to the LAPD, which has kind of kept her from ever coming under fire when they do busts. The other players, like Madam Alex, were all working with the LAPD, giving lists of their clients on a weekly basis. But Heidi wouldn't play the game. She broke all the rules. She kind of did it for fun, which is why she was so successful, but it's also what led to her downfall. So let's talk about how she got caught and how her relationships with Madam Alex and, Yvonne Nagy, her at one point lover and later, like nemesis, how those relationships are ultimately what culminated in her, downfall. So one thing to know is that Madam Alex and Yvonne Nagy hate each other, and they're also the two people that she was closest to in this business. And they're like the whole reason that she even knew Madam Alex is through Yvonne. So it's all like the three of them are very intertangled, but there's a lot of animosity among them. Madam Alex claims that Yvonne used to beat Heidi up Yvonne claims that Madame Alex is a drug addict and one of the most horrible human beings he's ever met in his life. She gets pleasure from making other people uncomfortable. So maybe neither is true. Maybe both is true. Maybe one is true and the other is not. But either way, they make some pretty big accusations of each other's, like, character.
Yeah.
Heidi says that Yvonne and Madame Alex are extremely similar people and love to romanticize each other's flaws. But the truth is that they make up lies about each other due to their tremendous hatred for each other, and that she just got stuck in the middle of it. Heidi's friend, Lahore Reed, which is such a funny name for a sex worker, claims that Yvonne brought Heidi down and it was a toxic relationship. Heidi claimed to hate him, but repeatedly reignited her romance with him. Yvonne says he always wanted to marry Heidi and have children with her, but he says that the reason they never did is that she was a drug addict and her motivations were only to get more drugs. And this is something that she admits to as well, is that a lot of her motivation in this business was her substance abuse, and that she was, quote unquote, a snobby drug addict. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this was to support her, like, expensive taste in drugs.
Me.
When asked why Heidi became a madam in the first place, her mother says she feels that Heidi was led into it and manipulated by Yvonne, and she was just naive. She's quoted as saying she wanted to try her wings pretty early, and she met some people that took all of her potential and gave it a sharp turn to the left. And she names Yvonne specifically as one of those people that's responsible for it, but it's heavily implied that she's also talking about Madame Alex. Madame Alex thinks that Yvonne turned Heidi in. Her theory is that he demanded her to go see him one day, and she didn't because she was busy and she was high, so she just didn't go. And he said, if you don't come here right now, I'm going to call the feds and turn you in. And he did. And Madame Alex says that he's a snitch for the FBI, and that's why the cops didn't touch him, even though he was also in this business with her. 6 weeks after Heidi was arrested for pandering, Yvonne was also arrested for drugs and pandering, but he was never charged or prosecuted, and neither were any of Heidi's clients. Heidi's attorneys accused investigators of entrapment. So that documentarian, Broomfield, learned from Yvonne that after the trial, Heidi was still in communication with Yvonne, even visiting his apartment. A quarter century later, she'd maintained a similar ongoing rapport with the man she said had betrayed her, even in the midst of threatening to go public about him. He offered the theory, Broomfield, the documentarian, offers the theory that her choices in people are self-sabotaging, and she's her own worst enemy for that reason. So even after this man ruined her life, she was, like, still romantically entangled with this, like, manipulative dude that, like, got her in this business and then also snitched on her for being in the business. So where this leaves us now that she's, you know, she's not the center of attention in the media anymore. She's done her time. She's, like, back in society and barely, like, talked about really anymore. So, for income, she has several different hustles. Every so often, a reality TV show like Celebrity Rehab with Dr. Drew will ask her to appear for a fee. And she's quoted as saying, I'm like, great, $500,000 for being a drug addict. This is phenomenal. A few years ago, she invested $1 million inheritance from her father into Bitcoin, intending to use it to support herself and her birds. And we'll get to her birds in a second. In February 2019, she filed a $4 million lawsuit against a former friend alleging cryptocurrency theft. And she now makes the majority of her living flipping Airstream travel trailers on eBay. So in 2005, she moved to, oh my God, how do you pronounce this place again? Hold on. I literally looked it up because of Pahrump, Nevada. So in 2005, she moved to Pahrump, Nevada, to open a much publicized quote-unquote stud farm for women willing to pay for sex. But the neighbors objected, and it never got off the ground. So while she was just now in this town in Nevada, she became aware of a bedridden elderly next-door neighbor, Marianne, who herself was a prostitute at one point, and a former madam, kept... And she kept a caged aviary of dozens of parrots in a single wide trailer. Heidi fell in love with one of the birds named Dalton. She says, "I just connected. It really bothered me that he'd been sitting there in that cage for 15, 20 years. And she says that she kind of related having been in prison herself. So she like got this affinity to help these birds, these caged birds. Also, by the way, I keep using the word like prostitute and prostitution because that is how these sources that I used refer to it. I obviously prefer referring to it as like sex work.
Yeah.
But a lot of these are just like direct quotes and also like how it's legally referred to. So sorry about that. Yeah, that's all I have to say about that. Anyway, so when her neighbor Marianne died, Heidi took possession of Dalton the bird and a few other birds and sought to place the others in a sanctuary. But when she went to look for sanctuaries to put the birds in, she says, "I found that there really weren't any that were truly what you think of when you think of a sanctuary. It would be a lady with an apartment in San Bernardino with a second bedroom and a 501c3 nonprofit registration," she explained. So she decided to build and operate a sanctuary of her own. She says, "I thought running 500 girls was hard. That was nothing." So she now manages about 40 parrots in her indoor-outdoor sanctuary. None of the sanctuary is caged. Instead, the parrots live beneath an intricate lattice work of netting, and they come and go as they please. She says, "Everything in my life, even my fuck-ups, and there's been a ton of them, everything worked out right because it led to exactly where I am right now. Most people would think I'm a kook because my heart goes out to the captive macaws. I think every day in prison was important because it made me realize how awful it would be if someone forced you to live your entire life inside a box. That's what happened to these captive macaws. It's not a popular subject matter. They need someone who's a little bit kooky like me to stand up for them." So it's possible to view her story as a cautionary tale of just another example of Hollywood's propensity of like and like patriarchal tradition of using women and then discarding them when they've lost their usefulness. You know, like Heidi was kind of the face of what was on it, like obviously a crime that was committed collectively by thousands of people, and the other people involved are male, powerful male clients, and so she was kind of like the sacrificial lamb to for like the LAPD to be like, "Wow, we really cracked down hard on human trafficking." Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the business is never going anywhere. Yep. Like, her going behind bars didn't stop her clients from still being clients of sex workers.
Yep.
And it should be noted that, like, she and her call girls and her clients were all willing participants. And it wasn't, like, you know, a non-consensual, like, mm-hmm. sex trafficking ring. So... even in her being the one to like fall on that sword for everyone, technically nobody did anything morally wrong in this situation. So it's easy to just kind of see her as like another example of like a woman taking the fall for and being villainized for something that was not alone her fault or even wrong. But she kind of insists that she wants no part of a redemption narrative. She rejects the wave of sympathetic reconsiderations that have allowed fellow 90s era national villainesses such as Monica or Tanya like a newly burnished platform as empowered female icons. Mm-hmm. She says, I'm not that likable. If you accept that, everything is so much easier. If you care what people think, you're their prisoner. So she doesn't care if she's redeemed in the eyes of the public, yeah. which I kind of think is iconic. She also is an open criticizer of the Me Too movement.
Mood.
She's skeptical of it and wants no part in it. In regards to Harvey Weinstein, when she was asked about it, she said, look, every girl has been sexually taken advantage of. I think he's disgusting and a pig. He handled this thing terribly. But some of it doesn't make sense to me, especially when they say, oh, it happened 6 times. That's weird. I think in certain instances, women slept with him in exchange for a part and he kept his end. And he kept his end of the bargain or didn't keep his end of the bargain. Which I find interesting, like, you know, I don't personally have any comment on that, but she was in the same, like, she was working with Hollywood execs in transactional mm-hmm. sexual relationships. So I think she has kind of a different insight on, like, what transactional sex in Hollywood looks like.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that necessarily means anything about Harvey Weinstein specifically.
Totally.
And it also doesn't mean that what he did isn't sexual assault, even if at the time it was consensual. Like, even if these women did think that he was going to give them a part or something in exchange for a sexual favor, if he doesn't keep up his side of that deal, that is sexual assault, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
If your consent is contingent on...
certain conditions
and those conditions aren't met, that is still assault. So it doesn't mean that he didn't assault these people, even if this theory of hers is correct.
Yeah.
She's definitely gotten a lot of flack for saying that, but like, I don't think that what she meant, like, you know, she like even acknowledges that she thinks he is terrible and that like she doesn't deny that these women probably have been taken advantage of. She just has a little bit of a different perspective on what the parameters of being taken advantage of may have looked like.
Yeah.
And when people accuse Heidi of glamorizing prostitution when she talks about her life, she says, is any job truly glamorous? Work is work and it's grueling.
Yep.
When looking back on everything, she says, it was a lot of fun. Of course, looking back, you see how stupid you were. It's easier to look at all your mistakes. But I definitely say, if you're going to live in LA, I don't see how anyone could have done it better than I did. You want to go out to every nightclub. You want to meet famous people, have sex with different people, eat at the best places, all that kind of stuff. And I don't see how it could have been any more fun, that's for sure. So my sources were the documentary Heidi Fleiss, Hollywood Madam, directed by Nick Broomfield, and the articles, by the Hollywood Reporter titled Heidi Fleiss is finally ready to rat out a client, but why, by Gary Baum. And that is a misleading title. She never actually ends up ratting out that client, but she went through a, brief moment of considering ratting someone out, but still held true to not ratting them out. Because, and the reason she wanted to rat them out is because they promised her a donation to her bird sanctuary and they didn't end up donating it.
Okay, me.
You with rats.
Yes, I'm with her rat sanctuary.
And then the Hollywood Reporter article, Heidi Fleiss reflects on her 25th anniversary of her arrest by Seth Abramovich, and then the Vanity Fair article, Heidi Does Hollywood by Lynn Hirschberg.
Gorgeous.
So, yeah, that is the story of the Hollywood Madam.
Amazing.
I'm obsessed with her, and I'm obsessed with her perspective on everything.
Heidi, come on the pod.
She definitely has a little bit of, like, internalized chauvinism, I think. Like, there's definitely moments. Like, she has the Howard Stern interview that I listened to part of, and, like, it's not like I agree with all of her perspectives or, you know, align with her life philosophies. But I do really like... that throughout everything she's held a certain amount of integrity and a lack of feeling like she needs to apologize for anything.
Yeah.
And I like that she has taken the consequences of her experiences to like help a otherwise overlooked population of animals that like need help. I think that that's just very, you know, old lady in a novel of her to have that life story and for it to culminate in her like taking care of 40 fucking parrots.
Yeah, absolutely. Moral of the story.
To me, the moral of the story is about, it's much more about having a better read on people's character and their and what their best interest is. Like, I think her mistakes were in who she trusted and who she, you know, got into business with and also into relationships with. But it's also, you know, if you're gonna get into a business that is illegal and has such potential for long-term consequences, you should probably not fuck over the person who taught you the ropes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying respect how this, like, business is ran if how the business is ran is, like, inherently exploiting people or something. But, like, you know, respect not stealing another person's customer base.
Totally.
And maybe don't keep running back to that toxic boy. That's the real moral of the story.
Yes.
Dump him.
Dump him. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is the moral of the story. Dump him.
Dump him. And, you know, when life doesn't work out how you thought it would, pour yourself into helping others. And if those others are 40 macaws in Nevada, so be it.
So be it, babe.
Anything else to add?
No, I mean, the only thing that I would add is that also sex work is just that. It's work.
It is. It's,
you know,
work.
I'm so tired.
It's a business.
So tired of people trying to act like it's like
some like big scandalous.
Or like it's like empowering, like more so empowering than any other job. Or like, you know, it's like there's always some frame of thinking either to support it or to not support it. And like,
it's just work. Yeah.
It's just a job.
It's just a job. And sometimes it's a very like high paying and rewarding job, but like it's
still just
it's still just a job. And yeah, like she said, it was grueling work. She exactly like had a bunch of payoff during like the good years of it, but like it wasn't ever easy money.
No.
And I appreciate her saying that. I also appreciate her being like, and I don't regret it because I had the best fucking time. Like, that's kind of iconic of her.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate that she was a call girl herself for a while, and like a lot of people that worked with her as call girls for her are interviewed in this documentary, and a lot of them had shitty experiences with Yvonne, but they didn't, like, they have pretty good things to say about Heidi, other than that they just think she flew too close to the sun and was, like, a little bit reckless and stupid.
Yeah.
But, like, as a madam, you know, she, like, she never sent the girls to do anything she didn't do or wouldn't do.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's that. And
thank you for taking us on that journey.
Yeah, no worries. I yeah, I'm obsessed, but you know, if there's anything to learn from that, it's have a better judge of character, be discerning about who you let in close, and I'm sure she's made it this far because she's been testing her holes and her drugs.
And her drugs. So you should do both.
So test your holes. Test your drugs.
And kiss your friends on the mouth.